we present Rosemary Miller as Molly Regan, Edward Bishop as Stanton Laird, and David Spencer as David Cope in Beyond the Black Stump, the novel by Neville Shute, adapted by Stephen Grenfell. Beyond the Black Stump. Mrs. Regan, Finifex Joe.
Driving as though the demon cell was behind him, as usual.
And there indeed, Mrs. Regan, he may well be.
As long as he's got my kerosene, he can have all the deals in hell chasing him.
As you say, ma'am.
You got my kerosene, Joe.
2 kilos. Kerosene for petrol, that all right?
Aye, that's right. Let's have a meal.
Okay.
Then you can have a cup of tea. Pat and the boys will be down in a minute to unload.
Here's the mail. I'll sort my letters, shall I?
Aye, David, you do that. And you, Molly, pour a cup of tea for Joe.
Plenty of sugar.
Right.
Ah, letter for you, Judge.
Ah.
And your usual English newspaper.
Thank you, indeed. My sister's a very regular correspondent, is she not?
Aye, she's that. Oh, here's Pat and the boys, Joe. They'll unload the drums.
Righty-ho.
Get the bottle, Molly, and the cold water and glasses.
Right, Ma.
Morning, Mr. Regan.
Morning, David.
What's that you got there, a baby kangaroo?
A long-legged mouse like this. What else would it be? The kindest hopper on this side of the Black Stump.
Here are your letters, Pat.
Thanks. Hey, in the name of God, what would this one be?
The man's too proud to admit he needs glasses.
And what would a man of my age be needing glasses for?
To read, of course. On the envelope, it says Bureau of Mineral Resources.
Bureau of what?
Oh, I know. It'll be from those people who were here a while back, forsaking about after the oil.
God mend them. They'll not be after coming back here again.
It may say in the letter.
I'll open it then, moment. And let's have some grog in the meantime.
Right, Dad.
It's from that man, Bruce, who was here before.
Here you are, Dad.
Thanks, huh? Well, woman, what does he say?
He says he's coming here in about 6 or 7 weeks' time, and he's bringing half a dozen Americans with him from the Topeka Exploration Company.
What for, in the name of God?
To make a seismic survey.
Huh?
He says there'll be a party of 7 with 3 trucks, and they'll be working on our land about 14 miles west of the homestead.
Oh, did you ever hear the like of that?
Well, that's what he's written here, Pat. And he says at the end that the survey will decide whether they drill a test well here or not.
Well, you can damn well write straight back, woman, and say that they're not wanted here. I'll have no part of them, no part at all.
I doubt if we have any right to refuse them, Mr. Regan.
Is that so now?
We hold this land on a pastoral lease. There's a clause in the agreement that reserves the mineral rights to the state of West Australia.
Mm.
That binds us to give reasonable access to the land for the exploitation of the mineral resources.
And would you call it reasonable that they should send Americans to Lara Station?
Some Americans are very pleasant people.
Mm.
I met a bishop once, an Episcopalian, who was quite charming. A bit mundane, I'm afraid. Very, very mundane.
They'll be working much nearer my fence than yours, Pat. I think it might be rather fun, having some Americans around.
Fun, is it? Would you be after calling it fun the way they carried on in Alice Springs all through the war? Glory be to God. No young girl living in that town that wasn't raped. And no old woman safe. Saving the house itself and the door locked and bars and all the windows. And Father O'Connor praying with her on her bended knees. With the damn Yankee soldiers bellowing round the house like raging stallions. Is it fun, you call it?
It wasn't like that at all, Pat. And well, you knew it. If there's any raping done here on Lara, it'll no be done by America.
I hope you don't mean me, Mrs. Regan.
Oh, no, David, I don't mean you. Anyway, there's going to be no raping on Lara Station. Heaven knows, the judge here's got enough kids in the school already.
Indeed, that is very true. I shall have 6 more children in the school next month than we have desks for. The Vogue twins and Mrs. Stockton's Elsie, and little Johnny 6, Palm Olive's little girl, and the Yardley boy. Yeah. I think we ought to order 8 more desks, Mr. Regan. After all, how can I rebuke these little ones for bad writing when they have to balance their slates on their knees?
Hey, another cutter, girl.
Come up there.
Damned Americans, always turning a man's life upside down.
Indeed, Mr. Regan. They belong to a race which possesses the capacity to do that. Mundane, yes, but vital.
7 of them. 3 trucks. Well, we can't have that many in the house.
Where will you put them?
Isn't there the shearer's quarters empty for them to sleep in? With wire beds for the bedding and a stove for them to cook on.
Aye, they might go there.
Oh, you can't put Americans in the shearer's quarters, ma'am.
In the name of God, why not, girl?
Oh, because they live differently to their dad. I've seen how they live on the pictures down in Perth.
Well, did you ever hear the like of that? It's a queer thing I'm thinking that the shearer's quarters are good enough for an Australian shearer and not good enough for an American with all the lechery and evil in the world in his black heart.
Look, Pat, I can put a couple of them up at my place. If they can cope with the gin's cooking, then...
Yeah, they'd be better doing their own cooking in the shearer's quarters. No, leave it, David. Mr. Bruce knows the way things are with us. We can't accommodate that many people. Anyway, they'll have everything they need for camping by their trucks, or they can sleep in the shearer's place. Well, if it comes to that, I might even make shift to feed them myself.
You like the convertible your mother and I got for you, son?
Oh, yeah, you bet, Dad.
She'll pass anything on the highway, except maybe a gas station.
Sure, Dad. I already tested her out, remember?
You want to take it easy with that kind of automobile.
Sure.
Your mother was very touched, son, to notice just now you still have that Bible she gave you 3 years ago before you went out to Arabia. You read it a lot?
Well, now and then. Funny, isn't it, Dad? Whenever you look in the Bible, you seem to find a sentence or a phrase that applies to your own life.
I know.
Take this bit I came across just now. Here it is. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. That means Arabia, I guess. And here, the Lord shall preserve thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth and even forevermore.
He did that, son.
I guess he did. The motor that failed in that plane bringing me back from Arabia might have failed way out over the Atlantic instead of only 30 minutes before we were due to land at Lisbon.
This is my rest forever. Here will I dwell, for I have desired it.
That's true, too, Dad. I'm home again.
Among your own folk, your own friends.
Yeah, it's really a great feeling. Really great. Say, talking of friends, you don't happen to know when Chuck's due back from Texas, do you, Dad?
Chuck Sheridan. Mm-hmm. Not for another month, I'd say.
Chuck and Ruthie, how are they making out these days?
Fine, I guess. Except
what?
Well, son, you know Chuck. He's still a lieutenant in the Air Force and likely to remain just that, I'd say.
But Chuck had a swell combat record when he flew jets in Korea.
Sure, but Chuck's kind of allergic to discipline, you know that.
Yeah, I guess maybe you're right.
He's stationed down at some big air base near Houston as an instructor.
Ah.
Last time he wrote, he said he, Ruthie, and their 4 kids would be coming home to Hazel on vacation in September.
I can't wait to see old Chuck again.
Trouble with Chuck is that every time he rises a mite in the estimation of the Air Force, he gets out of line and they slam him down again.
Yeah, that figures.
One of Chuck's brother officers came here in the early summer to do a little fishing. Seems your friend Chuck is now instructing fighter pilots, and he's developed a particular technique which apparently gives him a great deal of pleasure. A technique that can't be found in the Air Force manual.
What is it this time, dear?
Well, around that part of Texas, the railroads are mostly single track.
Uh-huh.
When Chuck goes night flying, he cruises around till he finds a train rolling along, the single headlight of the locomotive lighting up the track ahead.
Mm-hmm. I think I can guess the rest.
Correct. Young Chuck retires about 15 miles ahead of the train. Then he brings his aircraft down practically to track level and flies dead straight along the track at the locomotive with only one landing light switched on.
Oh, boy.
So far, apparently, no engineer has actually died of fright, but several have come mighty near it.
Yeah. Well, I can understand the way the United States Air Force might feel about antisocial habits like that one.
Oh, sorry I took so long to make the coffee.
Oh, that's all right, Mom. Dad and I were just shooting the breeze.
And you men have the gall to say women gossip. Now take your coffee while it's hot.
Thanks, Mom.
Your mother thinks coffee should be drunk at 90 degrees centigrade.
Yes, I know.
Oh, come now. Junior, you just don't know how much you've changed.
Not as much as all that, surely.
Oh, yes. Those 3 years have made you so brown.
Is that all?
No. You're a deal more adult and self-reliant.
Well, that's something.
Junior, You think maybe it's time you got to tell us about that letter you got from the Topeka Exploration Company in New York?
Oh, yes, yes, I was going to.
Did they say where they want to send you after your vacation?
Well, they've given me a choice, Paraguay or Australia.
There wouldn't be the chance of a job here in the United States.
Not unless I get myself married. My company gives domestic assignments to married men with families.
Paraguay, Australia. You'll want to think it over a bit.
Well, I guess I've done all the thinking I need to, Dad. I'll go to Australia this time.
But it's so much further away if you want to come back home on vacation.
I like the sound of Australia better, Mom. In a way, as I see it, that part of the country I'd be going to would be something like Arabia. Maybe not quite so bad. You couldn't run sheep at Abu Qaya.
I don't like the thought of you going back to a place like that.
Oh, it's healthy enough. I'd be more scared of getting sick in a place like Paraguay. Marshes and flies and fevers and all that.
Sure, sure. Dry place is better.
And there's the language, too. By the time you've learned a new language well enough to talk to the inhabitants, it's time to come home again.
Well, I guess you're right. Your mother and I were talking about you today when you were downtown. We were wondering whether your work is always going to take you to countries such a long distance away.
Well, I guess that depends on how I get on, Dad. Maybe the head office in New York one day, if I make the grade.
You'd like a city life? Has it meant a lot of money?
Oh, I don't know, Dad. I certainly wouldn't like living in New York.
A small town's best for small town people. Your mother and I, we've been mighty happy here in Hazel.
Sure, I know that. But there's nothing I could do in a town like this. I don't know if there's any place in the whole world I'd rather live in. But you've got to be practical. There isn't a single oil rig in 500 miles.
As you say, a man earning his living has to be practical.
You know something?
Huh?
When I go, I'd kind of like to see the Hazel Advertiser now and then. Oh, not every week, maybe. Just now and then. See what's playing at the movies. Things like that.
Sure, I'll have it mailed you from the office. You want a Portland paper, say the Sunday Oregonian as well?
Oh, well, Dad, I don't know that I'd read it. I guess if I have the Saturday Evening Post and Life and the Hazel Advertiser, that's all I want to read.
And your Bible?
Sure, Mom. That'll make my mobile library complete.
Have you, Stan? Chuck? Who else you expect, man? The president? You have any luck, Stan?
Oh, I hit one. A bit low. One of the bucks. The arrow went right through him.
Good. You bring him down?
No, Chuck. I shot again, but I guess I missed.
Hey, that's the guy I shot at. I saw he'd been wounded. I got him just behind the shoulder.
You and I make a swell pair of hunters. Well, I say we rest up a bit. I'm not used to this kind of terrain.
Okay with me.
Well, I guess this is where we start to take the fat off, if we're going to get that fellow.
Sure. When I get my breath back. I'm a fighter pilot, remember? I don't do this kind of thing every day of the week either.
If some of those kids you teach to fly jets saw you crawling around the woods like this with a bow and arrow, they'd think you were nuts.
They think I'm nuts anyway.
Oh, you blame them? Chuck, you, Ruthie, and the kids, you like it down in Texas?
We make out okay.
Four kids. Boy, Chuck Sheridan, the perfect coordinated family man.
Cut it out. Stan.
Huh?
What'd you think of young Tony when you saw him yesterday?
You really want to know?
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that young Tony doesn't look much like his pa or his ma. Kid's getting to look one hell of a lot like me.
Yeah. Ruth and me, we don't say nothing about that.
I guess you're the only people in Hazel that don't.
Ah, so what? There's nothing anybody can do about it now. I reckon we were all a mite hasty when we were youngsters.
Yeah, maybe we were. Anyway, it's all come out okay.
Mm. You're figuring on getting married, Stan?
Oh, one day, maybe. There aren't too many girls around the places I work.
Ruth and me, yeah. Well, we get kind of worried sometimes.
About me?
Sure.
Well, what about?
Well, it seems like you got the tough end of that deal of ours.
Oh, I made out okay. Reckon I got a long ways further than I'd done if I got married in high school.
Hmm, yeah, maybe so. Yeah, you got the book learning and turned into somebody, Stan. Me? I got Ruth and turned into a bum. I can't figure which of us got the better deal.
Okay, you big bum. On your feet. We'll get moving after that buck and shift some of this fat I spoke about.
Roger.
be beaut, David, having Americans here at Lara.
Your father doesn't seem to think so.
Oh, you know what Dad is. His back's worse than his butt.
The sheep are going to find the water situation pretty tough soon.
I know. How are you off for water at Lucinda?
Not too good, Molly. We've got a little left in the big dam.
How much?
Oh, enough to last about a month. The bores are running well, though.
Are you going to put down any more bores?
Oh, I'm not sure it's worth it. I just don't think there's any water there. We've got the two along the line of Blackman's Creek, and there's no sign of water anywhere else.
Oh, that's bad, David.
I know. We might put one down between them to spread the feed, but it'll probably reduce the flow of the ones we've got.
Yes. You've done well, David, for a man of only 22. Dad was saying only the other day how well you've done since you came out from England.
Well, my last wool check was £9,000.
Dad respects you. We all do. But four other graziers tried their luck at Lucinda and had to give it up.
Oh, it's always got to be a first time.
If we get a good long drought, a real drought, it'll dry up your bores and finish you completely, I'm afraid.
Well, let's hope we don't get a real drought then. Why do they call him the judge?
Hmm? Oh, the judge. Oh, we don't know his real name. He's called the judge because he was one. In England somewhere, ages ago, before I was born. He got the sack.
I didn't know a judge could get the sack.
Yeah, well, here's one that did.
Why was he fired?
Well, I'm not supposed to know, but I think it was for taking a more than professional interest in delinquent girls.
He's a strange old chap.
He's a wonderful teacher. I do know that. He taught me history. And my sister Bridget, he taught her to speak French and German before she was 10.
Molly?
Hmm?
Now that you're back from Perth, are you... you're going to stay here for long?
Oh, I don't know, David. I want to be a teacher, but now it's not getting any younger. I think I'll stay here for a year until my sister Elspeth leaves college and then let her come home and take a turn. Ma wants me to go to Scotland then and afterwards to France and Italy. I'd like to do that before I settle down and get a job.
Oh, that'll be a grand trip. You could come back via America.
I never thought of that. Hey, when these Americans come here, David, do you think they'll be like the Americans we see on the movies?
I shouldn't think so for a moment. They don't all live in penthouses or mansions in the deep south, you know.
Yeah, I bet they don't live in places like our shearers' quarters either. When do they arrive, anyway?
Over here.
What?
Came this morning, didn't you know?
Well, nobody told us.
Oh, talking of the movies, are you going to Clem Rogerson's show at Manor Hill on Saturday?
Are you?
Well, I usually do. Makes a change.
Ma likes to go sometimes.
Tell me on the air tomorrow night in the NASA session. I'll call in here and pick you up. If no one else wants to go.
Oh, all right, David. Thanks.
Hello there, Molly.
Oh, hello, Mr. Bruce.
Enjoyed the show?
Yes, it was beautiful.
You, David?
Yes, I did too.
Your mother and father here, Molly?
No, they didn't come. David brought me over to Manor Hill.
Oh.
Ma said they'd better stay at home in case you came over with the Americans.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. We got held up on the road, huh? Look, let me introduce you to Stanton Laird. He's the one who'll be in charge of the party on your father's land.
Oh.
Hey, Stan! Stan, come over here a minute, will you?
Okay.
I want to introduce you to some friends of mine.
Oh, swell, Mr. Bruce.
Stan, I want you to meet Miss Molly Regan from Lara.
Hi. Hello, Miss Regan.
Hello. I'm
certainly glad to know you. I hope we get onto your property today, but Don will have told you we're running kind of late.
Yes, I know. What happened?
I guess we just naturally got lost.
Well, between here and Morgan Down?
That's right.
But didn't you follow the tracks the mail truck made?
Miss Regan, one wheel rut just like another wheel rut to me.
Oh, Molly's the name, Mr. Laird. We use Christian names in this country, unless you're trying to be very formal.
Oh, fine. I'm Stanton.
Oh, and this is David Cope.
Oh, glad to meet you, David.
How'd you do?
Oh, you're not Australian?
No, I'm English. They call us Pommies out here. I've got Lucinda Station next to Lara.
Oh, that's to the west of Lara, as I recall it. I guess we'll be operating pretty near to your boundary.
Yeah, so if I can help you in any way, I hope you'll come over and tell me.
Well, that's mighty nice of you.
And I'll start right away by getting you a drink. What's your poison?
Oh, thanks, but I don't believe I'll take anything right now.
Oh, nothing at all. But everybody's groggy enough like fishes around the corner.
Groggy enough?
Aussie for drinking.
Well, maybe something soft.
Oh, what would you like?
A Coke, is that okay?
Sorry, we haven't got anything like that. Lime juice, lemon squash?
Lime juice, please. A long one.
Right, won't be a tick.
Don't you drink, Stanton?
Not alcohol. Not many people do where I come from.
Oh, I thought all Americans drank terrifically. I suppose I'm going by the movies I've seen in Perth.
Miss Molly, I'd say that the movies aren't a very safe guide to America. Of course, some Americans do live that way, or they wouldn't make movies about them, I guess. They'll do anything in Hollywood. But I come from the West, where we don't live that way at all. It's still kind of frontier where I come from. Ranching and riding horseback over the trails.
You still use horses in America?
Why, certainly. In my part. Where I live, there's nearly 300 square miles right close into town where you can only go on a horse. No roads at all. It's frontier still. Oregon. In back of the state, close to Idaho.
Do you know how many horses we've got at Larry's stand?
I'd only be guessing.
About 300, but I'm not really sure.
Heaven's sake.
Larry's just under 1 million acres, you know. It's not big as properties go up in the north. We feel it's just a comfortable size.
Oh, my face is sure red. You know what? I'm going to keep my big mouth shut about America till I learn something about this country.
Oh, no, don't do that. You don't know how much we've all been looking forward to hearing how you live and everything. We seldom get a visitor at Larry, and I don't ever remember anybody coming from abroad, except David. Hey, that reminds me. It's time we went to look for him, if we're ever going to get a drink, that is. He seems to have forgotten all about it.
Should be around about here, shouldn't it, boss?
Sure, Hank. Just about. Over there, see? That's the big limestone outcrop I showed you on the air photograph.
I get it.
Okay, down this spur, towards the flat country over there, seamed by that dry riverbed. Mm-hmm. Beneath that big limestone spur. Yes, I'd say a camp down there would be as good as anywhere.
There's not much life around, is there, boss?
Oh, Hank, just us. And a few Australian sheep.
It's gonna be kind of lonesome.
Sure is. Well, I guess this is it. This is what we've come for.
You run a line of shots across the valley, boss? See where that limestone goes?
Maybe. We'll make our camp down there by the dry riverbed for a start.
Okay.
Let's go then.
I got the gin to make some tea, Stan. As you say, the folk at Lara haven't broken you into rum yet.
No, not yet. Say, do they always drink it that way in this country, Mr. Coke?
David's the name, Stan. They drink their rum like that in the outback. And not down in Perth. It's just like England there.
I can't figure out why they're not all nuts, the way they drink this stuff.
Oh, don't make any mistakes. The Regans are good graziers, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's just another thing I can't figure out. Your own place now.
Hmm?
There must be a lot to do on a place like this.
Well, there's a lot to do, all right. I'm at it all the time, from dawn till dusk. It's a bad property, of course.
Bad?
If it was a good one, I wouldn't be running it at my age.
Oh, I get you.
Well, here's your tea.
Oh, thanks.
320,000 acres, but very little water. There's over 100,000 acres up your end we can't use at all.
Can't use?
There's not a single puddle in it. Any rain that falls sinks straight into the ground.
Would that be the area towards our camp?
Yeah, that's right, Stan. Can't run any stock at all between this homestead and your camp.
Oh, maybe you won't be so mad at what I'm going to ask then.
What's that?
Well, the strata on the Lara side are falling to the west, as far as I can see. And now I'm working close up to your fence.
Mm-hmm.
The department haven't asked for us to prospect on your property, have they?
Well, not as far as I know. You're quite welcome, though.
Okay, and thanks. So what about some lines of shot holes for a few seismic readings? That would only mean a couple of trucks on the land and a few small explosions.
I can't stop you, Stern, and not that I want to. We've got no sheep there because there's not a drop of water for them. And most of it I've never seen myself. If you go on it, I'd be glad to know what's there.
Well, I'll certainly tell you everything we find, Dave. Well, time out getting back to work. The boys will be wondering if I managed to get myself lost again.
Is that you, Stan?
It sure is. Where are you?
I'm in the office tent.
Okay.
Hello there.
I just drove over to collect your laundry, and as you weren't here, I thought I'd look through some of your magazines.
Oh, fine. See anything that interests you, Molly?
Oh, yes, Stan. You really do have lovely things in America. Tell me, are these pictures real?
Real?
Yes, you know, I mean, well, do you really have motor cars like this wonderful convertible?
Yeah, I guess so. Sure, I'd say that was about right.
Oh, you do have the loveliest magazines.
Oh, would you like to borrow some of them?
Well, if you really can spare them.
Oh, it's good propaganda. A real two-way stretch. While I'm learning about your country, you can learn a bit about mine, in case you ever visit there.
Oh, I'd love to.
Oh, that's settled then.
Stan, is it very cold where you live?
Well, most winters we have, oh, say, a foot of snow for around 3 months. In a bad winter, or a blizzard, well, it might run to a couple of feet.
Do you know, Stan, I've never seen snow.
Is that right?
When you have snow, do you really use sleighs with horses and bells on the harness?
Only on the farms, I guess.
Louder on the air, boss.
Okay, Hank. Well, it won't take me long, Molly. And when I get back, we'll have dinner. A cookie-made maple ice cream, special for you.
What a lovely night it is, Stan.
Yeah, it sure is.
Let's stop for a while.
Swell. Do you mind if I ask you something, Molly?
No, of course not.
The judge, is he, well, is he a bit nuts?
Oh, good heavens, no. The judge has got a very clear mind. Mind you, he gets a bit confused sometimes, but that's only the rum.
Well, that's exactly what I can't figure out. Now, back home, if anybody drank like the characters out here drink, he'd be right on the skids.
Oh, the judge doesn't really drink a great deal. Dad drinks twice as much.
It just doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Oh, Ma cuts a dam when she thinks they'd have enough. She knows about grog. Ma was a barmaid before she married Uncle Tom.
I always thought Mr. Pat Regan was your father.
Oh, yes, Stan, really. Yeah, I suppose we're rather a difficult family for strangers to understand. You see, after Mike and Charlie and Bridget were born, Ma and Uncle Tom didn't get on very well together. So Ma left Uncle Tom and married Dad. Well, Father Ryan says Ma and Dad aren't really married. We're all mixed here, you know, Catholics.
Didn't they get married?
Well, they couldn't, because they couldn't get a divorce.
Not even a civil marriage?
I don't think so. I'll ask Ma sometime.
Sure must make things kind of complicated.
Oh, I don't know, Stan. Not here in this part of the outback we call the lunatic.
I'm glad you told me all this, Molly.
Well, it'll help you to understand us. I suppose you think we're a lot of savages.
Why should I? People are much the same all the world over. You know that. We've all got a skeleton of some kind in our cupboards.
Oh, not you, Stan.
Well, you're dead wrong there. I think maybe I ought to tell you about mine.
Well, only if you really want to, Stanton.
I do. Here goes. You remember that guy I told you about, Chuck Sheridan?
Your friend who's an Air Force pilot?
Yes. Well, about 12 or 13 years ago, a few months after Pearl Harbor, Chuck and I and a couple of girls, we got in a scrape.
Oh, what kind of a scrape?
Oh, a real humdinger. It would have rocked our hometown of Hazel a mighty sight more than it did if it hadn't been for Pearl Harbor. But I guess the honest citizens had more important things in their minds than the misbehavior of its teenage population.
How old were you?
Oh, you're all about 16, I guess. There was Chuck and me, Diana Fawcett, and Ruth Eberhardt.
Your friend Chuck, isn't he married to someone called Ruth?
No, that's right. The same one.
Oh, so Diana Fawcett was your girl, eh?
Well, not exactly. You see, it's kind of difficult.
What happened?
Well, Chuck and I were real friends. And you know how it is with kids of that age. We shared all our belongings.
Including your girls.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'd never have believed it of you, Stan.
I know. That's just what Mom and Dad said after the inquest.
The inquest?
Both Chuck and I own jalopies. And one night we were playing a rather complicated game of touch in and around the streets of Hazel. Diana was driving with Chuck. Ruth was with me.
And you crashed?
That's what happened. I was coming down 4th Street at 70 to cross Roosevelt Avenue. I hit Chuck's Plymouth broadside on.
At 70? Oh, you must have been crazy.
No, not crazy, Molly. Drunk. I guess we all were. Chuck ended up with a concussion and a fractured shoulder. I was lucky, I guess. Only 3 smashed ribs. Ruth went through the windscreen, and she's got a mess of scars in her face to prove it that'll last her a lifetime.
And Diana Fawcett?
Diana was killed instantly.
What a terrible thing.
Indeed it was. When they had the post-mortem, they found Diana was pregnant.
Oh, that poor kid.
And, well, Ruth was pregnant, too.
What did the police do?
Well, Judge Hadley figured it this way. Diana was dead. Nothing could bring her back to life again. Though Chuck and I had killed her, we were all culpable in some way. I guess it seemed profitless to the old judge to start chucking me on the road to the penitentiary. He sentenced both of us to a year in reform school and suspended the sentences indefinitely, subject to the chief of police putting in regular good reports about us.
You were lucky, Stan.
Nobody realizes that better than me, Molly.
You said that Ruth was pregnant, too. So she and Chuck had to get married, eh?
Well, not exactly. Ruth had been my girl, and if she was pregnant, I had a pretty good idea of which out of Chuck and me was probably responsible. The Eberharts were playing the hell with Ruthie, trying to pressurize her to say which of us it was. Well, I guess she finally decided Chuck was more fun than me. Anyhow, she said it was Chuck, and they were married as soon as she came out of the hospital.
Stan?
Yes?
You were telling me the other day about this job your father's offered you on his own firm.
Oh, yes, I guess I'll be joining him next year.
Well, why not now if he needs your help?
We gotta make a hole first.
We're here?
Uh-huh. It's just a question now of fixing the exact location. Say, talking about fathers, I guess I'm not anxious to start anything with yours right now.
Oh, it is getting late.
Okay, let's go then.
Your sheep don't look too bad.
Not too bad, David. How's the rain been on Lucinda?
Oh, could have been a lot better. We only got about 9/10 of an inch at the homestead.
Oh, Uncle Tom says we got about 3 inches. Oh,
but then, Molly, you always get more than I do.
Oh, it doesn't do us any good. Goes straight into the ground. All the water we've got comes from boars.
I suppose that in America it falls straight into the mouths of the sheep.
Whatever made you say that, David? So far as I can make out, they run their ranches very much the same way we do. And they seem to have a lot more water than we do and smaller stations.
Better land, in fact. Everything's better in America, isn't it?
Well, if it is, it's because they've worked damned hard to make it so.
And I just sit on my backside and smoke my pipe all day, of course.
Oh, I didn't mean it personally, David. You work harder than anybody here in the lunatic.
Just that I get a bit tired of these supermen.
Well, what have you got against them, David?
I think it's because they're so ignorant.
Oh, I'm going back. You're always on the lookout for any excuse to run them down. They've brought a bit of America into the lunatic, and I think it's done us all good.
Look, perhaps we better change the subject.
Too right.
All right. Will you marry me?
That's a very poor joke, David.
I'm serious.
But you can't be.
I'd have asked you months ago if it weren't for the fact I'm probably going broke this year. I've been in love with you for a long time, you know that.
Yes, I know. Oh, what made you ask me now?
Oh, just to remind you I'm still around.
Because I've been going round with the Americans.
I suppose so, yes.
Look, I suppose someday I'll want to get married and settle down. But not for a while. I'm sorry you ask me now, David, because the answer's got to be no.
I thought you'd say that. Oh, well, let's forget it.
When Elspeth gets through college in a year from now, I want to go to England.
I suppose you'd rather we didn't go on meeting.
Well, David, if that happened, I'd be sorry, but it's up to you, of course. Look, so long as you realize I'm not marrying you or anybody else for the time being, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't keep on meeting. After all, there aren't so many people our age here in the Lunatic, but if you think it's not going to work out, we'll have to give it up.
Okay. We'll leave it like that.
Good night, David. I'm terribly sorry.
My dearest Stanton, I'm afraid what I have to write to you in this air letter
will be very bad news indeed. Your friend Chuck Sheraton was killed flying last week. Amy Eberhardt came round last night and told us the news. It has been a terrible shock to them, and indeed to everyone in Hazel. Chuck was stationed at a base called Harrisburg in Texas, and it appears he was instructing the cadets there in night flying. It must have been low test flying, or whatever they call it, because Chuck collided with a train. Amy was all broken up, of course. She never did like flying, so they've gone down by the Limited to arrive Thursday morning. She said it was a terrible accident, because one wing of Chuck's airplane hit the smokestack of the locomotive, and the airplane rolled up in a ball and burned alongside the track, in front of all the people in the coaches looking on. Ruthie, of course, is all broken up. So is everyone in Hazel. I mean, Chuck did so well in Korea, and then to get killed just on a silly training flight. You can't explain it. But God knows best. I am so sorry this news comes to you when you're so far away from us all. But now that you have decided when your work in Australia is done to come home to help your father in the family business, it won't be for long. I am so glad you've decided to come home, because it is at times like this that all Chuck's friends should be together.
All our love, son, and come home soon, Mother. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord.
This Anzac Day, boss, must be quite something, then.
Sure is, Spencer. It'd be a heap of trouble if we didn't stop work.
Well, we never stopped the drill for our own Independence Day.
Well, I guess Anzac Day is a sort of holy day, too. You know, Independence Day, Thanksgiving, and Easter all tied up together.
Well, what do you know?
You got the cablegram ready?
Oh, yeah, sure. Right here, boss. The operator at Hastings, Jerry Lee, he's been taking down a number of telegrams from various stations. Should be just about our turn.
Okay, let's try it, then.
Okay, I'll switch her on. What in hell was that?
The Lord only knows. Turn the volume up.
All stations off the air, please. Some station seems to be passing a medical message. Will that station please come in again and give station identification?
Hello. Hello. The bloody thing ain't working.
Give it him again, Bert. Hey, you've got to turn that switch to hear. Direct means receive.
This is 6 Easy Dog, Hastings Flying Doctor Service. When you want to speak, turn the little switch low down on the left-hand side to trans. Directly you've done speaking, turn the same switch back to red. Don't touch anything else on your set. Going fine. Right. Now turn your switch to trans and tell us what station you are. Over.
Hello. This is Bert Hancock at Manor Hill. We've got a bloke here who's cut his throat. He's bleeding pretty bad. And young Jim Copeland's gone and marched off into the bush. Hello. Did you get that?
Flying doctor here. I got your message. In a moment, I'm going to switch you over to the doctor in the hospital. First of all, though, who was it went off into the bush? Now turn your switch to trans. Now. Over.
Jim Copeland, that was. Went off in the middle of the night. Left a note on the cookhouse table that he was going back to London. I'll turn the switch now.
Flying doctor here. Was this man Copeland walking or riding?
Walking. All the trucks are here. He's a young pommy just out from home, Jackaroo. He got a bit full of the grog last night. Well, we all got a bit full. Over.
Right, Manor Hill. Hang on, will you, while I switch the radio over to the doctor in the hospital. Won't take a tick.
How did this man cut his throat?
With a razor, Doc. We got him out in the veranda, sitting up. It didn't seem right to move him.
Tell me how long the cut is, whether it's still bleeding.
I'd say it's about 4 inches, Doc. It's bleeding pretty fast still. Real nasty.
Right. Now look, Mr. Hancock. I'll come out just as soon as I can get an aeroplane. But first of all, you've got to get that bleeding stopped. Have you got any suits?
Turn it down a bit,
over.
Spencer.
Okay.
I don't know what they see, Doc.
Maybe some of us should go over with the first aid kit.
Take quite a while. The airplane with the doctor would make it first.
I guess I'll go over and take Tex with me. We're not so far away, and it might look bad if we didn't show up to help.
Okay, I'll turn it up again. See what's happening.
Well, I'll try it if you say so, Doc. I told you, though, I can't stand blood. Makes me sick in the stomach. I've shunned it once today already. This is Lara Station, 6-0. We heard the whole of that. Mr. Pat Regan and Miss Murray Regan are leaving at once for Manor Hill with medical supplies. The journey should take them about an hour and a half in the jeep. I'm afraid those poor boys must have been terribly intoxicated. Over.
Thank you, 6-0. I'll tell Manor Hill when they come on again. Listening out.
Flying doctor, this is 6QT, Topeka Exploration. We heard all of that. Mr. Laird and one other are leaving right now for Manor Hill. I guess we'll be over there in 2 hours. Over.
Thank you, Topex. I'll tell Manor Hill. Listening up.
I'll say they were terribly intoxicated. I guess that's what happens in this country when the manager goes off to Perth for Anzac Day and takes his family along.
Except at Lara, boss.
Lara's different. I'd say they're kind of pickled. It just doesn't do them any harm anymore. Besides, they've got a Scotch X barmaid in the driver's seat. Maybe that's what you want to run a ranch in this kind of country.
Oh, Stan, I'm so glad you've come. They're in a hell of a mess here at Manor Hill.
I know, we heard it on the radio. What goes on with the horses?
Oh, it's this boy Copeland, the Jackaroo.
Jackaroo?
Oh, Jackarooing is working on a sheep station as an apprentice to learn the work.
Oh, I see.
We've got to find this boy. He's out in the bush somewhere. Dad says he'd probably be dead by sunset.
Oh.
6 or 7 miles in the heat of the day, and then you're finished.
What can we do to help, Molly?
Oh, the country's too rough for your jeep. Can either of you ride a horse?
Oh, certainly I can.
No, I mean really ride, Stan. Well enough to keep up with us all day.
Oh, you forget I was raised on a ranch back home in Oregon.
Good-o. Well, that makes one more man.
What about you, Tex?
I guess you'll have to count me out, boss. I never got around to riding no horse.
Oh, well, that makes 5 of us with the 2 colored boys. Oh, we'll want a lot more people, though. I think, Tex, you'll have to sit on the radio.
Okay, Miss Molly.
Oh, what happened to the guy who cut his throat?
Well, I'm afraid he's dead.
And the character who had to do the sewing up?
Flat out in his bed, dead to the world.
Glory be to God, I'm glad to see you, Mr. Laird. Hell, you not see the like of this between Dublin and the County Kerry. Or in the whole of the United States of America, either, for that matter.
Stan can ride, Dad, and ride well. Mm-hmm. And Tex is going to stay with the radio.
Yeah, isn't that a great mercy now? We'll go up to the homestead now and see if we can talk to anyone on the wireless. It's 10 more men we'll be after needing with their saddles.
You were watching me just now when we were cantering.
I'm sorry, Stan. I had to see whether you really could ride, by Australian standards.
And?
You can ride all right.
Where do you suppose we ought to look for this guy?
Well, Dad said he'd probably took to the road at first, even though he was blind drunk. But that as soon as he got crazed by the heat, he'd leave it.
Well, if he used the road, we'd see his footmarks in the dust.
Well, for his sake, I hope so.
You know, I think Chuck would have liked this country.
Whatever put that into your head?
Oh, I don't know, Molly. I guess the kind of things happen around here that Chuck would have been able to handle.
For your sake, Stan. I wish he was here.
Thanks.
Well, I don't see we can do any better than go on as we're going, Stan.
You're the boss.
We must be 7 or 8 miles out, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
About that, I guess.
Well, we could have walked as far as this by night quite easily. Although we haven't seen any traces.
Yeah, this guy's good at covering his tracks, the nut.
I'd like to keep it going for another couple of hours, if that's all right by you. Say till 5 o'clock.
Fine. I just hate to think of anybody wandering about on foot in this kind of country.
Oh, no. They come out from home and they just don't understand. It takes a long, long time before they do understand.
Hey.
What is it, Stan?
I was just wondering, that might be over there on the road. Looks like a stone.
Oh, I don't see anything.
See that first kind of wiggle?
Yeah.
Well, on past that. The tree on the left. Just a mite past that.
Oh, it's a stone.
I guess maybe it is, but it's kind of rounded for a stone in these parts. And they're mostly red anyway. I guess I'll just take a look.
What is it?
A service water bottle. And it's still wet inside.
Well, then he must have come this way. Well, now we've got to find him. Look, Stan, hang it on that branch of that tree so that we'll know this place again. Now, let's see. We must be about 12 miles out and just past the second creek.
I guess this must be his trail.
I'm certain he can't be far away.
He isn't.
What?
See that clump of spinifex down there?
Where? Oh, yes, I've got it. My goodness, what wonderful eyesight you've got. Come on. Give me a hand.
Okay.
Well, he's alive.
Only just.
Yeah. He's burrowed right into the spinifex like an animal. Well, we'll have to cut it away from on top of him. Have you got a knife?
Sure. My hunting knife from back home.
Oh, he's scratched and torn by the spinifex grass.
And it looks as though he's bitten half through his tongue.
Oh, he's still alive. That's the main thing.
Okay. That's fixed the grass.
Oh, he needs water pretty quick.
Then we better get him up into a sitting position.
Righty. Here we go.
Here. Steady. Okay. Now, pour some of that water through his teeth.
Right. Oh, blast.
Oh, you'll just have to try and force him.
Oh, he's wasting a lot of water.
Hey, what about water? We're both pretty low, Molly.
We can get more from the river.
It's as dry as a rock.
Oh, it just looks dry, Stan, but there's water there, all right.
You're kidding.
Didn't you see those little holes in the sandy riverbed where the kangaroos had been digging?
You mean there's water down there in that riverbed?
Oh, yeah, where the kangaroos dug for it. Poor kitty, he didn't know that.
That makes two of us.
Look, Stan, it's only about a quarter of a mile to the river. Do you think we could get him there?
Oh, why, sure. I could carry him that far. Or we could put him on a horse.
Oh, it's better to carry him if you can manage it. There! They swallowed a little bit then.
Yeah, things are looking up.
Now, the best idea is to make a camp down by the river.
Yeah, sounds good sense.
If we make a fire, somebody's bound to come out looking for us during the night.
This kid, Molly, he's very near to death. You know that?
Yes. It's the skin. He's so terribly burnt.
Oh, let's hope somebody sees our fire soon.
I'll throw another bush on it, will you, and give it a stir?
Okay. Well, all we can do now is wait.
And pray.
Sure. And pray.
Stan?
Uh-huh.
When do you think you'll be back in Hazel?
Depends on the well. Right now, it doesn't look so good.
Oh, you mean you're not going to strike oil?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. But all we got so far is traces in the shale.
And if there isn't oil here, what'll you do?
Oh, I guess I'll resign my job with Topex, go home, and help my father with his automobile business.
Yeah. Yes, I see.
That way, I'll be home around July. I'd kind of like to go home and live in Hazel. I guess I've had my fill of hot countries in the oil business.
Do you know what that means, Stan?
Me going back home?
No. Not finding oil. Some of us were beginning to... well, dream dreams.
Dreams?
You know. You'll all go away and only a few concrete blocks and platforms will remain to show that you've been here.
Yes, I guess so.
But no more ice cream or... Coca-Cola and the lunatic. No more American magazines. No more stories about how you live in America. There'll be no chance of a town growing up here in the lunatic with hairdressers and shops and cafes and theatres and churches.
Well, if we don't make a strike, I guess that'll be true.
We'll all be terribly sorry to see you go.
I guess I'll be sorry to go too. In some ways.
Why do you say that? Surely you can't like living in a place like this. Not after Oregon.
Well, you get kind of used to a place. Besides, folk here have been mighty nice to us.
Oh, it's made a tremendous difference to us and the lunatic having you all here. In your shoes, I'd do the same. I'll be itching to get back to Hazel.
Sure, that's the way I feel, Molly. Yet in some ways, I just can't bear to leave.
Why ever not? What's so attractive about this place?
You.
You can't be serious.
I didn't mean to talk this way. I'm all of 8 years older than you, Molly, and that doesn't seem right. But ever since you let me tell you about Chuck, I've thought about nothing else.
Oh, Stan.
So that oil isn't down there. I just can't bear the thought that I'll be going away soon and never see you again. I guess there's one thing above everything else a man like me wants in his wife. That she be a kind person. And that's what you've been to me, Molly. Real kind. What your dad would say, the kindest hopper this side of the Black Stump.
Oh, I never knew you thought of me as a hopper.
Oh, I don't really, honey. That's sort of allegorical, like the Black Stump itself. But if I were to tell you that you were the kindest person I'd ever met this side of the Black Stump, I guess that would be true.
Oh, Stan, you're such a sweet person.
I'm in love with you, Molly. I guess I'm older than I'd like to be, and I might too serious for you, maybe. But I do love you very dearly.
Oh, Stan.
So, will you marry me?
Yes, of course I will.
Molly.
Oh, Stan.
What about your folks? Your dad, I mean. Do you think he's likely to be mad?
Not anymore. He didn't like Americans before you arrived, but he does now.
Well, I must say that sure does take my breath away.
A track! What did I tell you? Here, stir up the fire.
Sure thing.
I knew they'd find us.
Hello there.
Dad, it's Molly and Stan. We got the boy here, Dad.
You and his mother should be burning candles to the miracles of God, the way you found the lad.
Stan found him, Dad.
Then may the holy saints reward you, Mr. Laird. Once the doctor will be needed for this fella, we'll have to get the stretcher fixed up.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Regan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Laird. Come and sit down on the veranda.
Thank you. Molly says she told you about us.
Aye, she did that. I told the lassie you were too good a man for her, but it all flowed off her like water off a duck's back. And now, tell me, lad, what made you go and do such a daft thing?
Well, I guess everyone goes a bit daft when he's in love. But I'd say, Mrs. Regan, that this is just about the most sensible thing I've ever done in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope you won't live to regret the day. Now, Mr. Laird, we'd best talk practical politics.
Right.
There's one or two things to be settled before this goes any further.
I guess there might be.
When were you two thinking of getting married?
Well, I haven't talked this over with Molly yet, but I'd say the right time to get married would be before I leave here to go home.
Molly tells me you're a Presbyterian.
Yes, that's correct, Mrs. Regan.
My daughter's a Catholic. Were you thinking of having a Catholic wedding?
Well, perhaps a civil wedding would be better.
Aye, if the both of you are willing to give up your religious principles, which she's not, and I don't suppose you are. However, leave that be. And let's suppose we get Father Ryan to come here and marry you, for all the ill he thinks of Lara Station. Would your father or mother be coming to the wedding?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say so. It's quite a way to come.
What it means, then, Mr. Laird, is this. You and Molly would be married here, and then she'd go off with you to a country she's only read about, married to a foreigner, to settle down alongside relations she's never seen at all. It's a big jump you're asking of the lassie, Mr. Laird.
I guess I hadn't thought about it that way.
Many a girl's taken a big chance like that and come out of it well, but there's some that haven't.
Do you think, then, she ought to visit with us first, in Hazel? My folks would like that.
Aye, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, perhaps, if she went back with you and stayed 3 months or so, and then for you to be married in Hazel. And maybe I'd come over for the wedding and see America for myself.
Well, Mrs. Regan, I'd like to talk it over with Molly first. I mean, she'll be traveling halfway around the world with me and staying in hotels and all kinds of places. Some folks might think that kind of strange behavior.
If you're thinking of her reputation, Mr. Laird, you can put your mind at rest. My daughter comes from Lara Station, so she's none to lose.
Say, Mrs. Regan.
But while we're on the subject, laddie, I tell you, there's to be no funny business. Or I'll see to it she never marries you at all. You needn't think you'll put a chain on her that way. We're well acquainted with bastards on Lara Station. We can always use another.
Say, you've got me all wrong, Mrs. Regan. I would never do a thing like that.
You would never do a thing like... What happened to the jackaroo, Dad? Is he going to be all right?
Oh, by the grace of God, yes. But he's doing fine. Oh, he sends a message to the two of you to thank you for saving him. The doctor's taking him to hospital in the aeroplane.
Will he be coming back to Manor Hill, Mr. Regan?
Oh, he will not. Oh, it's back home to England for that buckaroo.
There's some that's fit for working in the lunatic and many more that's not.
That's a true saying, my dear.
Pat, Mr. Laird here has been asking for our Molly.
May the saints preserve us. The way the girl, you mean?
I guess that's the way it is, Mr. Regan.
Well, now, isn't that a great wonder that the like of you would want to wear a girly collar? was it in the dark night you asked her now, and the two of you sitting by the wood fire under the bright stars, waiting there by the poor jackaroo while I come to find you in the truck.
Yeah, that's right, Dad. That's when it happened.
Yeah, sure, because I had me suspicions. And you with the starlight in your eyes. Here, go and get the bottle, girl.
Right.
This is one time you'll take a drink, Mr. Laird, even if it lays you flat on your back, as all the boys at Manahill.
Well, maybe just a small one, Mr. Reed.
Just a quarter of a bottle, eh? No more.
Hi there.
Hello, Ted.
I thought I'd stop by.
Oh, come on in.
Thanks. Any sign of it letting up here at Lucinda?
Not a hope. 9 weeks at least before we can expect any rain.
How's the stock holding out?
I lost about 300 last week.
Jeez. Guess you won't have many left in 9 weeks.
I think I'll probably get by with about 2,000.
Out of the 4,000 you started out with. That's quite a loss.
Well, come on in and have a drink, Ted.
No, I guess I won't stay. The guys back at the rig will be wanting their chow. Oh, you heard the news?
What news?
Well, back at the rig, they're saying Miss Molly and Stan Laird aim to get themselves married.
Well, I dare say it's true. Do you know when it's going to be?
Well, he's going back to stateside in June, so I guess it'll be then.
He's leaving, whether there's oil or not?
Oh, there's no oil here, brother. Oh, this is a dry hole. A busted flush.
Well, Stan Laird's a good sort of chap.
They don't come any better. Too good for me, I guess. Oh, well, so long for now. I gotta beat it, or those guys will tear me apart.
Dad, may I speak to you?
Why not? Aren't you me daughter?
It's about... Well, it's about David Cope, Dad. Could we do anything to help him, do you think?
Glory be to God, girl. And why would we be after helping one like that against a normal summer drought, girl? Sure, if we help him this time, he'd be coming to us and expecting help every third year when the rain's short.
Yes, I know, Dad, but I would like to help him this time, though. You see, I had to be rather unkind to him, Dad. It's not the time to be unkind to anyone when his sheep are dying off like flies.
Was the lad wanting to wed you?
Yeah, that's right, Dad. And I had to tell him I was going to marry Stan Laird.
The blessed saints themselves preserve us. But is that a reason why we'd take 4,000 sheep upon the property, and them so starved that ate as much as bullocks?
Yes, it is, Dad, if we can do it. If somebody here was, kind to him now, it'd even things up a bit. How many sheep have we been running now?
Oh, hard to say, girl. 33,000, 34,000.
Dad, could we take his sheep and not get into trouble ourselves?
Are you still thinking of him, girl?
No, of course not. I'm going to marry Stan. Could we help David, Dad?
Listen now, girl. I'll drive up and have a look round number 10 bore tomorrow and see how much feed we've got up there.
Oh, thank you, Dad.
You'll be bringing bankrupt ruin on the Reagans, my girl. Sure, we could all live the life of Riley himself if we had no sheep.
There it is, honey.
But it's so large. You always told me Hazel was a small town.
Oh, that isn't Hazel down there. That's Portland.
Oh. Oh, Stan, that river, it's enormous.
Yeah, it's quite a river.
I've never seen so much water.
Well, as we Americans are supposed to say, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Will they like me, do you think?
Mom and Dad? Well, they'd better.
I'm scared.
Oh, honey, you got no cause to be. They're just ordinary folk, like the folk in the lunatic.
Oh, darling, you're wrong there. In the whole wide world, I don't think there are any people like the people in the lunatic.
Well, maybe not quite so nuts. Anyway, there's no cause to worry. So relax, honey. They're going to love you as I do.
Mom and I had quite an argument about that jacket, Miss Regan.
Mr. Laird, couldn't you call me Molly? It'd be much nicer.
Okay, Molly it is. Junior wrote us in the letter you had bronze hair, so I figured a two-tone suede jacket and a kind of brown would suit you best, but Mom here said green.
I was right, too.
Sure, honey, then you always are. Anyway, Miss Molly, you look mighty nice in it.
Oh, it's beaut. Oh, you've been so kind to me, I don't know what to say.
Shucks, why shouldn't we be? It isn't every day we have a prospective daughter-in-law to visit.
I think it's very brave of you, my dear, to come such a long way to meet us. Junior wrote to tell us about you not being engaged yet. And Dad and I think that's real sensible.
Well, I think it's a bit of nonsense, Mrs. Laird. Stan and I wanted to get married, but Ma said we weren't to be engaged until I'd stayed with you for a bit. The only difference is that I haven't got a ring.
Your Ma's right, dear. Oh, by the way, if you want to, you can call me Helen, children. So they're fixing a bungalow for her.
When's it going to be finished, Dan?
I'd say in about a month. Dan told me Ruthie'd be back here in Hazel in the fall.
Has she got any money?
Not a lot. I guess Dan kind of worried about that, too.
Poor Ruthie. All those kids, too. I guess he sure got the rough end of the stick after all.
Lucinda Station, near Malvern Downs, Western Australia. 26th August, 1955. Dear Molly, as far as I can make out, nobody here in the Lunatic seems to be writing too much, so here goes. The last of the Yanks have gone now, and there's nothing left of them except a few slabs of concrete on the ground, and the 4 3,000-gallon water tanks I bought off them with some piping and brought over to Lucinda. We had a really good wet after you left, and all the creeks are running, which sort of makes up for the rain we didn't get in the summer. The sheep are doing well, what's left of them. Thanks a lot for getting your old man to give me a hand. You've got some marvelous feed on your place out past your number 10 boar. You saved my bacon and I'll never forget it. Thought I'd send you a wedding present with this letter. It comes to you with my love, you know that. It's a book of poems. A Shropshire Lad by A. E. Houseman. It may not be your first wedding present, but I hope you like it. I've marked my favorite poem in the volume with a faint cross in pencil. Oh, when I was in love with you, then I was clean and brave, and miles around the wonder grew, how well did I behave. And now the fancy passes by and nothing will remain, and miles around they'll say that I am quite myself again. I've been going over to Lara quite a bit since you went away. They love getting your letters and hearing all about America. It must be quite a place. It's been pretty dull here since you went away. But your old man says he's going to find me a yellow girl or a good-looking gin, if you can imagine such a thing. So I'll be all right, I suppose. All the best, David.
Now, you just sit down and relax.
Oh, dear.
They're back, then?
Yes, Amy, Ruthie, the four children. All of them. Claudia and I have been there all afternoon helping them to get into the new Eberhardt bungalow. Sakes, my dear, if ever there were two worn, haggard women and four weary, fretful small fry, they're just plumb tired out, all of them.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Well, Ruthie brought back a whole sack of dirty diapers.
Oh, good.
I know Ruthie would appreciate it if someone were to put them through a washing machine and hang them out.
Right, I'll go around and get them right away.
And if you wait 5 minutes, there's a kettle of potato soup that it won't take me a moment to warm up.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Molly Regan. I'm stopping with the Lairds.
Oh, hello there. I'm Ruth Sheridan.
Yes, I know. I brought some potato soup.
Oh, thanks.
And Helen said there were some diapers that needed washing.
Oh, have you come to do the diapers?
That's right. I'll do them in our machine and bring them back in the morning.
Oh, thanks. They're all yours, sister. Wait till Pa comes back with a car and he can drop them off at the Laird house for you.
Well, I can carry them, then I wait.
What, you don't mind walking down the street with a sack of diapers?
Why should I?
Say, you wouldn't be the girl who came back with Stanton from Australia.
Yes, that's right.
Well, what do you know?
Or in motor cars.
Stan told you what happened to us when we were kids.
Yes, he did, Ruth. I hope you don't mind.
No, of course not.
When I was coming over here from the Laird house, I saw your boy Tony in the street. He's an awfully nice kid. He really is.
Mm. You notice anything about him?
Well, of course I did. He's just like Stanton, isn't he?
And you don't mind?
Well, Ruth, why ever should I?
Well, it's got to be a lot more noticeable these last few years. Oh, I guess we were real wicked in those days. Wicked and crazy.
Now, listen, Ruth. You really mustn't think that I'm upset about it. I really do mean that. I come from a place that's very different to Hazel. More irregular, I suppose. Where I come from in the lunatic.
The lunatic?
Yeah, that's what it's called, honest. Anyway, there are a good few illegitimacies there, both black and white. Well, I'm one myself, for that matter.
You are?
Yes, I am.
Boy. Hey, does Helen know that?
Well, not unless Stanton's told her. Ruth, Tony is Stanton's son, isn't he?
Yes, honey, I guess he is. Oh, I kind of hoped he might be Chuck's, but... Oh, well, maybe I did wrong when I told everybody the baby was Chuck's, but I'll never be sorry I did it.
Of course you won't. Nobody's any the worse for what you did.
Maybe not. Oh, I don't know.
Ruth, I'd best take the diapers now. Anyway, the Lairds will be expecting me back for supper. Hazel, near Portland, Oregon, United States. When I came into my room just now and read what I'd written, I realized it wasn't the sort of letter I wanted to write. So I tore it up and started again. All day I've been thinking about this letter. I don't suppose you'll understand, but I will try and explain. Hazel really is a lovely little town, and all the people here have been terribly kind to me, especially the Lairds. But a number of things, small things, it's true, have begun to get me down. That's why I just felt I wanted to be alone in the privacy of my room to pour out all I wanted to say to somebody who really knows me. But it really is just marvellous here. The country's so pretty and the people are so nice. And the shop's so full of everything anyone could want. The road's so good. The motor car's so lovely. Oh, it's exactly like those advertisements we used to look at in the American magazines. Do you remember when you got so angry and said that I thought the American supermen were better than anybody else at everything? Oh, it's all the opposite to Lara and the lunatic. So that it's crazy to be always thinking of home. David, I wish you'd write again sometime when you aren't too busy and tell me more of what you and everyone else is doing. I hope that now the wet has come, things are better for you and Lucinda. If only you had water there, it'd be a marvellous property. You'd be able to marry a beautiful girl from Perth and be rich and have hundreds of thousands of sheep and lots of children. But, of course, Lucinda is one of the driest properties in West Australia, I'm afraid, and there just isn't anything anyone can do about it. So the beautiful girl in Perth, whoever she is, will just have to remain single. I know I'm going to be terribly happy in this lovely place, but it's going to take a little time to settle down. My love to the yellow girl, or is it girls? Yours, Molly.
Hiya, Mrs. Laird.
Hello there.
Mom sent me over to get the diapers.
Oh, you must be Tony.
That's right. You the Australian girl that came back with Stan?
How did you guess? Oh, I've got the diapers right here.
Gee. You look just like an American. Say, what are you laughing about?
Did you think I'd be like a colored girl?
I've seen pictures of Australians in school, and they were all colored. Long spears, and they threw things called boomerangs that come back.
Yes, that's right.
But there are a lot more whites than coloreds in Australia, just like there are here.
I guess I didn't know that.
There are a lot of things you don't know, young man.
I guess so, Mrs. Laird. Mom said to say thanks for the diapers. Bye now, see you later.
He's an awfully nice kid, isn't he, Helen?
Why, yes, I guess he is.
It's all right, Mom. Stanton told me all about him.
Oh, he did?
I'm sorry, Helen, but I can't help laughing. Stanton said he wasn't sure if Tony was his or Chuck's, and he meant it, too. As if you couldn't tell just by looking at the boy.
Tony is Chuck's son, Molly.
But, Helen, it can't possibly be. Stan must have been exactly like that at his age.
You never knew Chuck, Molly. I guess he and my son were pretty much alike.
Oh, it's all right, Mom. You mustn't cry. It's not going to make any trouble whoever his father was. Now, Stan told me all about it a long, long time ago. Not long before he heard Chuck had been killed. And I don't mind a bit. Honestly, I don't. Now, you come and sit down and I'll get you a nice cup of coffee.
He is Chuck's son. Ruthie always said so, and she ought to know.
But it doesn't matter whose son he is, Mom. He's a nice kid, and that's all that matters.
You wouldn't want him around the place if he was Stan's child, Molly. But he's not Stan's. Stan was never wild like poor Chuck.
Mom, Stan was only 16 when it happened, and he told me all about it.
I just don't understand how you young folk look at things these days. I mean, what would your own folks say if they knew?
Oh, don't you worry, Mum. We're quite used to this sort of thing at home. We live a long way out in the bush, you know, on Lara Station. And things happen there that wouldn't happen here. Why, I've got a whole family of half-caste half-brothers and sisters living with us on the property. We don't talk about too much. I don't mind about Tony. And it just wouldn't mean a thing to Dad or Ma either. They just laugh.
What did you say about half-caste brothers?
I've got three of them, and two half-sisters, yellow girls. You see, there weren't any white women in the district when Dad and Uncle Tom first went to Lara after the 1418 war, and they lived with gins, the black women, you know. Of course, they gave that up when Ma came along. I suppose we're really a lot worse than you are here. Honestly, you needn't worry about this any more, Mum. You just forget all about it.
Molly, let me get this straight. You don't really mean you've got colored people in your family?
Well, Dad and Ma are pure white, of course, and I'm pure white. But I've got half brothers and sisters living on the property, and they're colored.
You mean real colored? Like the colored folks here?
That's right.
Stan never told us that.
Does it make any difference?
I just don't know. It's all been so sudden. Guess a boy's folks kind of like to know before he marries into a colored family.
Helen, we don't call ourselves a colored family. Not that I'd mind very much if we did. Now, I think perhaps you ought to have a talk with Stanton, Helen. He'll be able to explain things better than I can, because he'd see them more the way you do. And he's seen the way we live.
Maybe that's right, dear. I guess I'll have to have a talk with Stan.
Come in.
Am I disturbing you, Stan?
No, of course not, honey. Come in.
Oh, you're not still working on that report of yours?
Oh, come and sit down. I'm afraid I am, honey. It's quite a report, you know. What is it, Molly? You look kind of worried.
Stan, tomorrow morning I want you to see about airline reservations for me.
Airline reservations? Is this some kind of a joke?
No, Stan, it's not a joke.
But you can't be serious. You're not worrying about all this talk that's going around town about you.
What are they saying?
Oh, nothing very much. But, honey, Maybe you want to be a bit more careful what you say in front of folks.
What about?
You know about your colored half-brothers and things like that. You know how folks talk in a small town like this.
Yes, I know.
I'm only mentioning it because I don't want you to be unhappy.
Well, it doesn't matter any longer.
You're not serious about the reservations.
Yes, Stan, I really am serious.
I just don't understand.
Stan, I think I must have said what I did about my half-brothers and all that on purpose.
On purpose?
I'm not ashamed of it. It's just one of those things you can't do anything about it. So it's no good worrying.
Why couldn't you just leave things be, Molly?
It would have been deceiving your parents, and that's not the right thing to do, not when they've been so kind to me.
But
besides, it would all have to come out one day.
I don't get that. A person has some private things. He doesn't tell everyone.
If we were to get married, Stan, and my father came over here to see us, what would you do? Get in a couple of cases of overproof rum and entertain him at home? Or would you take him down to Skid Row? Stan, I've been thinking about an awful lot of things since I talked to Ruth. Before you and I could think of marrying, Stan, your people, Aunt Claudia and the Eberharts and your friends and all the people in Hazel, they'd have to know all about me.
What do you mean, all about you?
Oh, about me being illegitimate, for a start, and, oh, lots of things. For instance, about Dad and Uncle Tom swapping Ma for a Mauser rifle, things like that. It's all part of it.
Well, you couldn't tell them that.
Well, why not? It all happened, and it's all a part of me. And I'm not going to marry you, Stan.
But why? Why? I just don't understand.
Darling, it wouldn't work. I see that now. And you will too one day. You do now, if you're honest with yourself. There's too much between us. I like you terribly, but if I married you, we'd both be unhappy. Oh, it's no good going on and kidding yourself that it'll all come out good when it's like that.
I don't see it that way at all, Molly. Honest, I don't. Sure, there'd have to be adjustments.
Oh, it's more than that. It's much more. Look, Stan, I don't think I could stand it here, for one thing.
Oh, honey, I thought you
said... Oh, it's not. I don't like Hazel. It's a lovely little town, but I think it would just kill me to live here. Forever, I mean.
Tell me why. Please. I want to understand.
Well, everything's been done here, for one thing. Where I come from, everything's still to do. Oh, there's so very much to be done and built and made in the lunatic. Oh, I'd like to go back and have a hand in doing it.
Oh, sometimes, honey, I kind of feel that way myself. But you only live once. There's no call to live your life in a place like the lunatic.
Well, there's one other thing I'd like to say while we're talking like this.
Go ahead.
Stan, I think you ought to marry Ruth one day, after I've gone away and all this has died down. I think that's the right thing for you to do, and I believe you know it yourself.
Well, I guess when a guy's girl starts cracking up another woman, then it's kind of final.
I guess it is, Stan.
Maybe you'll feel better about everything in the morning, honey.
No, Stan, this is it.
All right. Now, I want to ask you something, Molly.
Well, I'll answer if I can.
You're going back to marry that English boy, David Cope?
Well, I can't answer that one. I just don't know. I shouldn't think he'd ask me.
He asked you once, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Well, I've got a wedding present for you and David. Or perhaps it'd be better to say a kind of dowry.
Wedding present? For David and me?
Sure. Here it is.
What is it?
Here.
It's a piece of paper.
The last page of my report. Go on, read it.
On plan one, surface spot levels below -150 feet are indicated by the area hatched in brown. Within this area, bores sunk through the anhydrite rock can confidently be expected to yield an artesian flow.
Templar. I don't understand.
That's my wedding present to the two of you, Molly. Water. Scads and scads of it. Right under Lucinda Station. Clear, cool water. The clearest, coolest water this side of the Black Stump.
Jane Regan, Dorothy Smith, Pat Regan, J.G. Devlin, the judge, Walter Fitzgerald, Mr. Laird, Patrick Barr, Helen Laird, Brenda Dunridge, Chuck Sheraton, Jerry Stovin, Spencer, Stephen Thorne, Jerry, Bruce Beebe, Gordon, Frederick Treves, Ted, Alan Haynes, Ruth Sheraton, Mary Wimbush, Tony, Peter Bartlett. Other parts played by members of the BBC Drama Repertory Company. The play, which was recorded, was produced by Betty Davies.